The fire was once a field. The new world order, once the new world. Old gods tapping the glass like drunks, pausing to feel the pain's kick. Here's a new one. What do you call a man who falls over while unwrapping a lozenge? Hypoglycemic. The kind of parent who'd set fire to a summer drive, tell their kids to get out of the car and walk. When the curb has overtaken the road, those left join the traffic that ran them aground. I'd like to help, but I'm too busy protecting myself. So thank you all for coming. It's really a pleasure to be here at the Thin Air Festival this year and to do a solo reading at lunchtime. I don't think this is something I've ever done before. I'm going to read a couple poems from my latest book, The Chemical Life, for you. This next poem, as the book was described, it's a book about anxiety and mental illness and addiction. This next poem is about anxiety, but it's also about the way stories are told and the way stories are told in my family. And my dad is quite a storyteller. When I was young, I once came home from public school with my brother, and my dad was shooting the side of our house with a gun, and we decided to figure out why, and it turned out he'd seen a spider, and he's deathly afraid of spiders, and I think he was trying to get rid of the spider, but not going near it. But over the years, he would sort of retell this story, and eventually the spider became something more, more poisonous, more dangerous, and bigger. It became a scorpion. Vesica piscis. Iron lung, the bifurcation of a scorpion's tail. Viewed in thirds, venom extends past the knuckle on my father's ring finger, spreads until it's closer than it appears. Why won't he listen instead of repeating, this is pain, and this is pain, and this is pain? We hardly know each other, have never shown weakness, not convinced of its existence despite our privilege. On second inspection, it was a spider grazed him, legs lopped off in the midst of a fit. The only scorpions we've known were kept as pets, as minstrelsy, appendages that mimicked faces beneath their masks. Just as quickly as weakness appears, it snaps back. No breathing apparatus, no venom, only a victim asking for a pill, or why aren't my pills where I left them? If you think I'm ungrateful, try being betrayed by the orthodoxy, your children, and everyone else who doubts the scorpion's malice after the fact. So there's a few poems in this book that are named after drugs that are used to treat mostly anxiety disorder. And this next poem is one of those poems. It's a poem named after the drug Effexor. And it's about a friend of mine. We spent the summer sort of in the park listening to records. He was also non-neurotypical and on the same medication. So this is the chemical name for Effexor is venlafaxine, which is what this poem is named. The needle dropped out of habit, tongue interlocking with a tooth-cut groove. On Roncesvalles, before command reinforced our fear of shame, we'd circle Sororan Avenue Park like wolves loosed from the infirmary. The dame's rockets were armed with blossoms, and because we were free to fill in the field's texture, its grass and grain, I'd slide discs from poly sleeves as my brother cased the corner where moths lined the gates like lookouts, beating through an unchanged city. Before the caps downed to keep us, more us, the gates were peacock blue. The blues rerun, each note held where an ocean threatened to overthrow the stylus mid-song, tidal flats diminishing our senses, our sense of self. Painted with a too small hand, you can see how brush strokes overwhelm the mind, the cortex questioning, are we not? Are we not more than the first word or the last? Whoever set our interrogation to consciousness, set it on the LP we mistook for landscape, set it with recurring strain, dizziness, overwhelming the parks round. Curfew. Tonight, I'll move over shared ground, my mind free to feel, free will rippling out like shark gills. So I always like to, I was talking to my lapel there, it gets a bit louder. I always like to do a cover poem when I read, to break my readings up and to give someone else's voice a turn. I had the privilege of putting together this anthology, The Next Wave, an anthology of 21st Canadian century poetry in 2018. And it's an anthology that that compiles 40 sort of emerging Canadian writers that are some of my favorites. So I'm going to read you a poem by a writer who lives in Vancouver named Raul Fernandez. And this is called The Goodnight Skirt. Permission to use that snowball you've been keeping in the freezer since 1998. For a poem, she asks. What else, I say. I'll trade you, she says, for that thing your mom said at the park. What was it? God, that mallard's being a real douchebag? Yes, that one. Deal, I say. Okay, how about the Korean boy who walks past our house late at night singing Moon River? Oh, you can use that, I say. I wouldn't even know what to do with it. But there is something else. I've been wanting to write about the black skirt we've been using to cover the lovebird's cage. The goodnight skirt. In exchange, I'll let you have our drunken mailman, the tailless tabby, and I'll throw in the broken grandfather clock we found in the forest. One more, she says. Last night, I say. The whole night. She considers for a while, then, okay, that's fair. But I really had something going with that lovebird. All right, I say, write it anyway. If it's more beautiful than mine, it's yours. I also always like to read a poem for my wife, Erica, who's in the audience today. Erica's from Manitoba, so this is a bit of a homecoming for us. And I'm going to read a new poem that I wrote in my sleep, actually. It's called To Sleep Through. To sleep through the night, the lowering balloon that stills the chop and spill of the lake. One awake, or awake enough and dream to follow the stink of a fox through the trees. To asleep while the last of a bonfire burns the beach, balloons into thought without articulation, without speech. One awake, brightening behind the bathroom door where the other waits, listens to the tap, foam, foam, foaming at the mouth, white noise drowning out the fox, the fire, the balloon inflating until it pops. Now I'm going to read a few poems from a book that was published in 2014 called Dog Ear. If you guys want copies of this or the anthology, I actually have some on me that you can get from me if you'd like. This next poem is an ekphrastic piece, which means it's a poem written about a piece of art. It's named after the painting that it's about. It's called Sunday Afternoon on the Island of La Grande Jatte. It was painted, I'm sure many of you know this painting, by the pointillist Georges Seurat. And it comes from, the idea for the poem came from an article that I read about the paints that Seurat used to paint this painting in. Apparently they were experimental pigments at the time and they were meant to last longer, but the exact opposite happened and the color of the paints have changed significantly over the, a little bit more than 100 years since the painting was painted. So I imagine Seurat looking at his painting now and noticing this, so it's sort of in the voice of the painter who enters the painting in the poem. Sunday afternoon on the island of La Grande Jatte. Some days, bathers. Others, an endless stream of bodies gathered like waves veiled from the sun for a century. Still, the color's not right. Mercury welling in the vermilion that spots a dress, draws a monkey from the afternoon shade. To look upon this world is to hold a note long enough to still the sien. Hesitate until I'm one with the crowd, where you careen like overlapping points of light. At dusk, I find you admiring sails that emerge in the east. Address you in the presence of a cornetist. Mademoiselle, allow me to hold your parasol while you dab paint against my lips. Like this. No, like this. So a poem I like to read when I travel is a poem called Parachute, because it's a poem I wrote in a plane, and every time that I fly, I think about jumping out the window and parachuting down. I'm not sure why, but it always gets a laugh when I say I wrote it on my honeymoon. Parachute. Packed, it rests its wings like a vampire bat, a cape branded by scaffolding that mimics its spine. At 10 and 2, the heavens open. Judge deferring to executioner. Shrapnel reassembled, bearing the inscription, "Keep calm and continue to sin." How close can one be brought to the ground without touching? Pull the cord and suffer each vertebrae's dislocation, the big bang of a second skin. And I'll do one more. This is a poem about Evel Knievel. Evel Knievel, for me, has been this sort of strange poetic muse, because I think every time I sit down to try to write something, it seems like I'm doing something stupid, which I think is what, you know, Evel Knievel was doing every time that he attempted a silly jump. This poem's about his jump of the Caesar's Palace fountain in 1969. You can watch a lot of his stunts on YouTube, so I used to watch this sort of over and over again compulsively. And I wanted to write a piece that looked at the four stages of his jump: the contemplation, the takeoff, the actual flight, and then the crash, because this was not a successful jump. So to do that, I've actually written this as a glossa, and a glossa is a piece that incorporates lines from another poet's poem. So it incorporates four lines, and you'll hear these four lines at each phase of the jump. And they're by a poet called Roddy Lumsden. I'll read them to you now, and I'll read the poem. So Roddy says, "Have heard myself speak fluently in my own language. Have heard myself too described as hard work, as hard to get through as scotch broth, though once someone rather bladdered told me I was magnetic." This is called Evel Knievel Negotiates the Fountain at Caesar's Palace. "Behold my face at a quarter turn. Dragonly, dog-eared, a carnal mask mirroring half-lit spits of wood. This morning, Nevada furrows, my shoulders too warm for leather, yet I've no better armor against the wind, the stagey palms that threaten to bend and replace my stationary ramps. Caesar's Fountain. Downrange, I prepare to be bandaged, hear myself speak fluently in my own language. Bridge the strips around my bicep. It's where I..." Fuck, not like that. "Grip the razor downhill. There. Push. I turn my gaze towards the melee that surrounds my bike. Makings, landfill, a network of forgotten jumps. A backwards glance before a maelstrom of sand. Derelict, I've seen how closely my muse lurks. Have heard myself described as hard work. Having the face of an eagle, lion, and ox. Tricked out in off-white chaps, cape, the valley of the shadow of death, I gauge the line from rubber to ramp, uncamp its frame on doubled wings. Fountainside, Romans balance, flock to witness my ramshackle horse couple with sky. Behold my stance, my corrugated flanks that rake the air, its absence. As hard to get through as scotch broth, though once I groped around and found myself unmoored at latitude. What mechanics hold me, having already landed? What patience, body tossed ass first over the gas tank's hive? The desert revives as if in dream. My head a brick, a helmeted weather vane unraveling in every plane at once. Lo, it's clear that this is paradise, and if given a mic, someone rather bladdered will tell me I'm magnetic. Thank you all for coming. Please come chat with me. Poets don't get that very often, and I appreciate it. No, I was trained as a physiologist.
Physiologist?
Yes.
And is that what you do on a daily basis?
It is not. I did my degrees in physiology, and I'm now a full-time editor, writer. Yeah. No. My daily basis is I work for several different presses, so it's normally editorial work. I do carve out time for myself. I find that I write for myself less and less these days. It's funny being in a creative field, because you often burn that energy on someone else or something else. And what I do, for my day job is the kind of work that makes it hard to go back to my own afterwards. But I carve out some time to write. Yeah, I actually really love editorial work. I find that sort of collaboration with another writer is very fulfilling. So I like it as much as writing my own work. That's part of the reason. I think as a poet, as a person who goes to a lot of poetry readings, I like a broad range of work to try to keep entertained myself. So I try to give that when I read. I also read last night, and I tried not to repeat myself. So there was a lot of different. I kind of used my A material last night. Sorry, but the stuff that I read most often. But poetry is a funny thing. It's sometimes like it works better on the page, and some things read better. So I tried to read the things that I feel like read better, and maybe are things that an audience can connect to. I'm not an oral learner. I need to sit down with things. So if I'm on the other side listening, I really only catch snippets and think, like, I need to sit down with a book. Like, I'll know it's maybe something I'm interested in, but I have a really hard time digesting it, and I need to read it. Yeah. Again, it's just a way to break up my voice. I don't really want to stand up here and hear my voice for, 15 minutes. I'd like to sort of include someone else and hear someone else, and I don't know, I just think it's a practice of a way to give back, this is something that I really love, and I love other poets, and so I sometimes read things that I like to an audience to sort of give them a sense of, of what I love.
Again, very much.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.